Budget bills 3, 6, or 9 months late. Supreme Court vacancies that span two administrations. Cabinet appointees of both parties getting dragged through the mud. Members of Congress using bullhorns to shout about policy. Meanwhile, federal employees look on with horror. You don't have to be an old-timer to sense how rigid and bitter Washington has become, exemplified by the lack of comity in Congress. For some perspective, we turn to longtime Washington insider and former counsel to the House, Attorney Stan Brand, now a senior counsel at Akin Gump. Mr. Brand, good to have you on.
Good morning.
You go back to being the counsel for Tip O'Neill, a famous negotiator and also counsel to the House at large at that point. Is it really much worse, or do we just have rose-colored memories?
I think it's a little of both. You have to go back, really, I think, to 1994 with the switchover from 40 years of Democratic control to Republican control and the breakdown in comedy, which started back then. A Republican freshman famously said in 1994, "I didn't come to Washington to compromise," which, of course, in my view, is the central element of any political process. Since then, it's gotten much worse, aided by the fact that members of Congress don't come from the ranks of professional politics anymore. They come from all walks of life. They don't see being in Congress as a career. And they have no party or other affiliation that disciplines them in any way. In fact, many of them run against the Congress. In 2010, I believe, when the Tea Party surge came, I think I read that of the 87 new members, not a single one had any previous public service in an elective office. So that's why we've gotten to where we are. And, of course, the country, the electorate, is bitterly divided over issues and over policies, and you put on top of that the fact that we've redistricted ourselves into these enclaves of red and blue, which are impenetrable from the other party, so that you have no motive to compromise. And I think you put that all in a witch's brew and you have where we are.
What do you make of large numbers of members of Congress and people that are career politicians, for the most part, say boycotting the inauguration, for example? And the shoe goes both ways. I mean, it just happens to be Democratic to Republican switch this time around. Probably happened the other way the last time. But what do you make of that way, of that kind of behavior by members of Congress?
Yeah, or a Republican member of Congress shouting out lies during the president's State of the Union message several years back. I think most of that stuff is over the top. Of course, I'm an old-timer. In Tip O'Neill's day, you would battle with the president or the person in the other party, but you respected them and you respected their office. And so you would fiercely battle during the day, and at night you would go out to dinner, you would socialize, you would play cards, whatever. I don't think that happens much. If it does, it happens infrequently and is not part of the fabric. I think that's just an escalating animosity that comes from the frustration of not being able to control the levers of power. And it's an unfortunate development. And I don't know where we get out of that.
How might it have been different, say, in something like the Affordable Care Act, which was voted in entirely on party lines, something that maybe decades earlier, no less than Daniel Patrick Moynihan warned, don't enact major legislation strictly along party lines, totally different from, say, the Civil Rights Act, which lots of arm twisting. It was not a clean, rosy process when you look at it in detail, but things had gotten very much worse. How might that have gone?
I think it would have gone much better. I'm not sure where along the line there could have been compromises on elements of the Affordable Care Act, but had they been able to do that, I think the landscape would have changed. I'm reminded of the budget fight that occurred in Bill Clinton's term, where they passed the budget with all Democratic votes. And of course, that was sort of the precursor. I think you're right. I think any legislative effort of that magnitude that doesn't carry some bipartisan support is headed for trouble down the line.
We're speaking with Stan Brand, former chief legal officer of the House of Representatives, now a senior counsel at Akin Gump. And a lot of people have pointed out, well, we don't have earmarks anymore. That was taken away in the whole budget control phenomenon that's several years old now. Is it true, do you believe, that earmarks were a way to grease the gears of government, and especially in Congress?
Well, it's more than greasing the gears. To me, it was always a separation of powers issue. It put controls and guidance on bureaucrats who weren't elected. And unfortunately, the other aspect of what has happened in the post-Watergate era is what I call hyper-ethics. And we have tangled ourselves in so many different overlapping and contradictory ethics rules, whether it's the Ethics in Government Act or the Stock Act or the Gift Rules or the Lobbying Act, that we can't really participate in an open and free way in the types of exchanges that you have to make a compromise. So, yes, I think earmarks were not an evil. They were part of the way Congress asserts its direction over programs it passes and appropriates. And the absence of that makes it much harder to come to agreement.
What else do you think what steps could anybody take at this point on the Hill?
Yeah, I think it has to start in the grassroots. I think one of the problems, and again, this is not a partisan issue. Both sides have done this. I think you have to start drawing these congressional districts in a way that mixes constituencies so that members of Congress don't feel beholden to only one stripe of belief in their districts. That's the way the compromise starts. It starts at the grassroots level. And I think you have to find a way to create legislative districts that are not so monolithic politically that they encourage people to vote along purely doctrinaire lines.
That sounds like the kind of thing that only some sort of a commission that's above the whole party idea could get accomplished.
Well, we've started that. California has it. Redistricting was taken out of the hands of the state legislature. Unfortunately, what happened there is we now have a solidly blue state. California, I believe, voted overwhelmingly for Hillary Clinton. I think it was 63%, which was the highest percentage since Franklin Roosevelt ran. They went to a commission model, and we had, I think, 10 districts where there was no Republican running. They went to the two highest vote-getters in the primary. So you had two Democrats running against each other in 10 districts. I don't think that is actually a good idea either. So I don't know that the commission idea works. It's been tried in California. It's been tried in Arizona. Maybe there's some other mechanism that would work.
So maybe we need some horse trading to get to better horse trading.
Yes, exactly.
Now, since we have you, I know that you were the counsel to Tip O'Neill at the time of the now fabled compromise on tax cuts between him and President Reagan.
Yep.
How did it really work?
Well, you know, this is a story that I tell. Social Security, which was a big problem as it is now, because of the growth of the baby boom generation and funding entitlement. Social Security was in a tough spot. And essentially, Reagan and O'Neill went into the Rose Garden and took a walk and made a compromise and came out, and they each went back to their respective bases and constituencies and told them, this is the deal we have to make to save Social Security. And they shook hands, and that was that. And Social Security was stabilized for 25 years. I don't see how that could happen today. As John Boehner said famously, it's hard to be a leader when you don't have any followers. And so I don't know how you fix the system so that people have a loyalty to a leader, or at least a belief that the leader is taking them in a direction that suits their own political interests. In the House Republican caucus, we've had a succession now of speakers who can't keep their own caucus together, and so they can't make deals. They can't shake hands on something and deliver because their own caucus won't support it. And that's put us in a very tight spot on some of these big issues.
Stan Brandes, former chief legal officer of the House of Representatives, now senior counsel at Akin Gump. Not sure we got to any answers, but it's great to have you on for some insight.
Thank you. I enjoyed it.
We'll post a link to this interview at federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive.